כל ישראל יש להם חלק לעולם הבא, שנאמר ועמי כולם צדיקים לעולם ירשו ארץ, נסר מטעי, מעשי ידי להתפאר. רבי שמעון אומר, שלושה כתרים הם, כתר תורה, וכתר כהונה, וכתר מלכות, וכתר שם טוב עולה על גביהם. The Mishnah that I chose today is in the fourth Perek, and it is the 13th Mishnah. The reason why I chose this Mishnah is because in a few days we're going to be commemorating the minor holiday that is called Lag BaOmer. Thank you, Toda Rabba. In most years, I am not here for Lag BaOmer. As I make my way to the holy city of Meron, and I like to participate in the festivities by the holy grave site of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the guest of honor on Lag BaOmer. That's his day. For different reasons, some say that's the day that he passed, and that's when he left us the Zohar. On the day of his passing, he revealed the holy Zohar to his students, as written in the Iddira. Some say that's the day that Rabbi Akiva actually started his second yeshiva. His first yeshiva, 24,000 students had passed. On Lag BaOmer, he gave semicha to five new students, and it's from those five students that we have all the Torah that we have today. So it's a great day. If Rabbi Akiva would have resigned, like most people would have done, if you lose a yeshiva like that magnitude, you said that's it, had enough. And instead of burying his head in depression, he went further. And thank God that he did, because one of the five students is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And without that, we don't have all the great accomplishments of the Tzaddikim. So I'm not going to make it to Meron this year, for the obvious reasons. It's one of the consequences of the pandemic, that it's not so easy to get to Eretz Yisrael. And even if you get there, it's not so easy to get to Meron anymore. Until God willing, these things will settle down. There is probably a deep reason, according to the Kabbalah, why God is taking away these important privileges and events that have gone on for thousands of years. Why all of a sudden now they're becoming a little more difficult? Maybe another day we could discuss it. So I asked one of the great Tzaddikim, is there another way to connect to Meron if you don't go? So the rabbi answered me, and he says that if you don't go to Rabbi Shimon, you have to bring Rabbi Shimon to you. How could you bring Rabbi Shimon to you? You quote the tzaddik what he said. When you quote the tzaddik what he said, so it says you have to imagine whenever you quote the tzaddik that he's in front of you. And therefore, the tzaddik comes to hear when you're quoting him. So today, ladies, I opted to bring Meron to us, to bring Meron to the well. I know it's a Pirkei Avot class, so we had a challenge. I had to search through the six chapters of Pirkei Avot to see if Rabbi Shimon is present. And according to my findings, I found only one Mishnah in all of Pirkei Avot that is quoted by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So because it's timely, I chose that Mishnah, and happens to be, like all the Mishnayot in Pirkei Avot, it is a classic. Now, again, just a few words about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, about the author of today's statement. So we know that Rabbi Shimon was an exceptional, exceptional soul that God sent down from the heavens. Zohar Kadosh actually tells us that there's two givers of the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the revealed Torah, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai gave us the secrets of the Torah, which is the Kabbalah, the Zohar. And they say that there's a lot of similarities between the lives of Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbi Shimon. First of all, Moshe Rabbeinu also, if you remember, was a fugitive. After he had killed the Egyptian in Mitzrayim, he had to run away and hide out. The same thing happened to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He got in trouble with the government He made a statement that the government felt was offensive. It probably was. But they didn't understand what he meant. And he had to run away to the cave. And both, when they returned to great fame and great influence. The Moshe Rabbeinu would return to Mitzrayim and then eventually give the Torah at Har Sinai, and the Bishamon would do the same. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah, the Pasuk says, Alita Lamarom. You went up to the heavens. Shavita Shevi. Shevi means captivity. The Torah was in captivity. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to wrestle it from the angels that did not want to give it up. The angels were very overprotective. I don't blame them. They wanted to keep the Torah in heaven. So it says, Alita Lamarom, Moshe, you went up to the heaven, Shavita Shevi, and to pull the Torah down. Our rabbis say that not only did Moshe Rabbeinu pull down the Torah, but somebody else pulled down the Torah, and that is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And the word Shevi is Rashetevo Chin Be'edud Shimon Bar Yochai. So therefore it's hinting to us, Alita Lamarom, Moshe went up to the heaven, but Shavita Shevi, also Rabbi Shimon, similarly, was able to bring down the great secrets. All right, now let's go back for a second. One of the famous statements that Rabbi Shimon said once was he wondered why God only gave us one mouth. He felt that we should have two mouths, one for Kodesh conversation, and one for mundane stuff. He felt that, you know, you need to have a kosher kitchen and then a mundane, you know, part of kitchen that you use for regular interactions. I guess the Mishnah felt that Torah is so holy, it can only come out of a pure mouth that's not used for other, you know, nonsensical or mundane or ordinary pedestrian conversation. But then he concluded that we have a hard enough time controlling one mouth. We can only imagine the challenges if we had two mouths, Lashon Hara and stereo. So therefore, he said, now I understand why God gave us one mouth. But his lesson was that how careful we have to use our mouths, that we're using it for Kodesh. So if we're using it to speak the Vnei Torah, which is the word of God, that should be the biggest motivation not to speak other Devrei Chol or Devrei Isur, things that are forbidden. Because then, God forbid, there's traces of that forbiddenness in that mouth, and now you have a mixture of Kodesh and Isur together, which clearly would not be accepted. Now, what did he say in this Mishnah? Bishimon Omer, Shelosha Ketarim Hem. There are three crowns. The first crown he refers to is Keter Torah. Keter Torah is the crown of Torah scholarship. Now, obviously, not everybody is able to be on the level, to be zocheh, to merit the crown. These are talking about the scholars of Israel, the hachamim, that dedicated their lives to the study of Torah. So at a certain point, we grace them with keter Torah. We say, you have the crown of Torah. That would be the great Rosh Hashivas that we have today, the Gedolei Hador, the great Tzaddikim, that devote their lives to the study of the Torah. That's keter Torah, Torah scholarship. The second crown is called Keter Kehuna. That's the crown of the priesthood. If you come from the family of Aharon HaKohen, so that makes you a Kohen. And therefore, if you serve in the temple, so you merit Keter Kehuna. And the third is called Keter Malchut. Keter Malchut is the crown of kingdom, kingship. In Judaism, if you come from the Davidic dynasty, if you come from David HaMelech's family, so then that puts you in the dynasty. David was a king, his son Shlomo was a king, his grandson Rehavam was a king, and you go all the way down. So if you have the genes, so then already you have the royal blood, blue blood. That's called Keter Malchut. My wife's grandmother Sadie, Alei Shalom, just passed away. She was a righteous lady. Sabut Bat Altun Alei Shalom. She was a great woman. That's an understatement what this lady was. And she prided herself, Grandma Sadie, the sultans pride themselves, that they have a direct lineage to David HaMelech. Yeah, so they had a family tree in the house. When I got married to Sandra, so I was added to the tree by association to be married to Sandra. So I said, you're lucky, you made it to the tree. So when I went to see it, It was very, very impressive. You see, they can really go all the way back, and you see David HaMelech is on the top of the tree. And anyway, so that's, and they had royal traits, the sultans. They have royal traits. It seems it's not a coincidence that their behavior is, fit for noble people, even till today. One comment on that moment in history, when I got to see the big Oktag, it was like a spreadsheet of just names of people connected to David HaMelech. There were two names that were highlighted. David HaMelech was one of them, and Jerry Seinfeld was also highlighted. It seems that somehow he got in there through marriage. And sorry to tell you that I think a lot of the members were more excited to be related to Jerry Seinfeld than David HaMelech for some reason. I did ask Sandra later on why my name is not highlighted also. Famous guy. They said, but you're not as famous as the other guy. So David, King David and Jerry Seinfeld, they have deal, of course, but that's for another. That was one of the claims that I had to change it, but they said they can't change it. Anyway, so those are the three crowns. Now, whenever we study Pirkei Avot, we follow the rule of the Gaon Mevilna. The Gaon Mevilna's rule is that anything that's in these Mishnayot has to have a source. These rabbis were not just freelancing and just talking ideas. The ideas always have to be traced back to an origin. As a general rule, ladies, whenever you study Torah, you always have to know, this is the statement, where does it come from? The rabbi can say, I just said it, it's what I think. No, we don't believe that. The Torah is not a bunch of opinions. All Torah has to have a father and a mother and a source. So Gaon Mevilna's theory was that everything in Pirkei Avot, you have to find it in the Torah somewhere. So I went back to the Torah, and to my dismay, I did not even find the word keter in the Torah, let alone keter Torah, keter kehuna, keter malchut. Although I did find that, what I believe that the Mishnah is putting it in that order, because it's following the chronological order of when these things were delivered to Bnei Israel. We got the Torah first. And then after we got the Torah, a year later, we built the Mishkan, which was when Aharon was inaugurated with Keter Kehuna. And many years later, we enjoyed our first King Shaul, which is Keter Malkut. So I think the Mishnah chose the order following the chronological order of the Torah, meaning Keter Torah, Keter Kehuna, Keter Malkut. But I was looking, where do we see in the Torah anything about these crowns? To my excitement and surprise, pleasant surprise, I went to look at the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, the tabernacle, there were different furnishings in the Mishkan. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us each furniture, what it was made out of, what its dimensions were, and where exactly was the location in the Mishkan itself. But I found that there's three out of the many furnishings in the Mishkan that have something in common and makes them unique above all other furnishings. And that is that these three Kele Mishkan have what's called Zer Zahav Saviv. Explain to you. What is Zer Zahav? If you look in the English, in the Oscar will tell you, a golden crown. Which means, if you ever see a picture of some of the furniture of the Mishkan, there's like a gold lattice that comes around the top of it. Mm-hmm. It's for design purposes, but they call it a zer. It's a keter. It's a crown that is on, it's an adornment. It comes on top of the item. So I said to myself, coincidence, three items in the Mishkan have crowns. So I said to myself, what are the items? Well, the first item is the Aron. Naron is the ark. It says, Va'asita alav zer zahav, that you should place above it a crown. Now, what is the Aron? The Aron is the house of the Torah. The Torah is placed in the ark. The tablets of Moses, not only the keepers, but the broken ones also, are in the ark. So is it a coincidence? That's the source of Keter Torah. That the Torah is telling us, when you build the Aron, make sure there's a zer zahav around it. I said, okay, we must be on to something. Then I found that the second piece is the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is the altar That's probably where the Kohen spent most of his time by the Mizbeach bringing Korbanot. And what does it say about the altar? The Asita lo zer zahav saviv. That you also have to make it a crown. There's the source of Keter Kehuna. And then the third piece is the Shulchan. Now the Shulchan was the table. Now this is not like any table you ever saw. The table was made out of gold. Now when you see a gold table, the holy books refer to that as Shulchan Melachim. It's the table that's befitting of kings, regular people, you know, regular folk. We have nice tables, but you have this gold table. That's only you see in the palaces. And therefore they say, since the Beit HaMikdash is God's palace, it's worthy for him to have a table with the showbreads on it that is made out of gold. So therefore the gold represents the majesty of God. That's the kingdom of God that's called Shulchan Melachim. And what does it say by the Shulchan? Ve'asita lo zer zahav saviv. That you must put a crown of gold around it. So therefore there is a source in the Torah for the three Ketarim. What is the word zir? How do we know that that's a crown even? Yeah, you're right. To Rachel, God willing, I'll look at Rabbi Samson Rafael Hirsch. I'm not minimizing your question. Rabbi Hirsch did exactly what you're doing. He would see like the word zir, and he would say, strange, that's the word also for zar, which has nothing to do with Zer, seemingly. A Zer is a crown, and a Zar is a stranger. But he found commonalities between the words. He was an expert in etymology. So, but he needed, let me check out Rabbi Hirsch, and I'll get back to you, and I'll give you the root and origin of the word Zer. Please stay tuned. But I'm giving you just advice. Anytime you have a word question like that, Rabbi Hirsch is the expert. Or the rabbi called the Malbim also loves to give you the roots of these words. But it is a fair question. What is the word Zed? It's called Kol HaKetir, by the way. Oh, how do we know it? I don't know. As she told us. Anyway, I will say furthermore that my belief, and I know this to be true, that besides the Mishnah writing these three things in chronological order, I think they're writing in order of priority and importance. I have to believe, and I know it to be true, that Keter Torah is higher than Keter Kehuna and Keter Malchut. For the obvious reason, you don't have to do anything to earn or to be part of the second two groups. You were born to a father that's a Kohen, you're a Kohen. That's nothing that you earned, that's nothing you deserved. That's something that's automatic. And Keter Malchut is the same thing. If you got lucky to be born to Peretz, which is the line of kings, so which is from Yehuda, and David HaMelech descended from there, so you got lucky. Nothing that you did. Whereas Torah, and this is a very important concept, Torah is there for the taking. Torah doesn't belong to anybody, and nobody has a monopoly on the Torah. And Torah is not a dynasty. One has to keep in mind that although a person may come from a long line of scholars, you don't inherit Torah. Torah is something that you have to earn on your own. And that's why it's very possible that you can have even, let's say, family that had generations of Amaaris, of ignoramus, and all of a sudden they produce and you say, hey, where did that come from? Because Torah is there for the taking. Torah has nothing to do with your lineage. You could have somebody that was an ignorant man and brought a light of Israel into the world. So therefore, Torah, since it's earned, I believe that's why it's written first. And if we go back to the Mishkan, which becomes the source of this Mishnah, I made the following observation. I'd like to tell it to you. If you look at when they made the Mizbeach, it says, Ve'asita Etam Mizbeach. Ve'asita is singular. When it talks about the Shulchan, it says, Ve'asita Eta Shulchan. That's also singular. However, when it talks about building the Aron, it says, Ve'asu Eta Aron. Ve'asu is plural. I think the reason why the Torah spoke in the plurality is as if to say, these two items, the Mizbeach, which is Kehuna, and the Shulchan, which is Malchut, it's a private club. Ve'asita, it's a private club, members only. But when it came to the Aron, the Pasuk says, Ve'asu. Ve'asu means, Kol Abba Baruch Abba. It's open for the public. The Torah is in the corner. Anybody that wants to come and take it and study it and learn it, the Keter can be on his head also. And I remind you what the Talmud says. Talmud says, you have to honor a scholar, and you also have to honor the high priest. But the Gemara gives the following scenario. Who deserves, rightfully so, more honor? Talmid Hacham Mamzer, Kohen Gadol Am Haaretz. I'll give you the two choices. Everybody's over 18 over here. You know what a Mamzer is? Mamzer is a child that's born from an illegitimate relationship. A child, forgive me, of adultery, let's say. That child is called Mamzer. That's the biggest stain that a person can have on his reputation is Mamzer. But let's say the Mamzer becomes a Tamid Hakam. It wasn't his fault that he was born a Mamzer, it's his parents' fault. He was a Mamzer, but he became a Tamid Hakam. And then you have a Kohen Gadol, but he's an Amaris. But he's an ignorant, he doesn't know Torah. The Gemara says, clearly, you must respect the Mamzer Tamid Chacham over the Kohen Gadol Amaris. What does that show you? That Torah scholarship has the tilt, is even higher than Kohen Gadol, even though he serves as the high priest. Furthermore, when the Pasuk refers to scholars, when God was giving the Torah to the Jewish people, God says at Matan Torah, which we're going to read in a few weeks on Shavuot, God says, Ve'atem tihiyu li mamlechet kohanim. Interesting. God says, with receiving this book, you become kings and priests. Mamlechet kohanim. Which means the Torah is inclusive of the others. That when you have Keter Torah, it's higher than, because it, including the other ones, when God said, Mamlechet Kohanim, so you see Torah is clearly the highest of all the Ketarim. I'd like to say a chidush for a moment, and then I'll get to the main point of the Mishnah that I came to speak about today. Consider this a free introduction. The Gemara, asks in Chulin, Mordechai min haTorah minayin. Where is Mordechai's name mentioned in the Torah? I love these questions because Mordechai is in Megillat Esther. His name is in, I don't know, every chapter in Megillat Esther. But the Gemara is saying yes. But everybody has to have their roots in the five books. Even though Megillat Esther is part of the Tanakh, but that's already, you know, after the Torah. We want to know where Mordechai is mentioned in the Torah. So they say, hey, we found him. He was hiding out in Parashat Tetzaveh. But we located him. Where was he? When the Torah is talking about Shemin HaMishha. I explained to you, what is Shemin HaMishha? There was a certain special oil. It was called the oil of anointment or inauguration, inaugural oil. It was made up with certain ingredients. The Torah tells us the ingredients, tells us how much of each ingredient you have to put, how to make it. It was a fragrant also. And when did they use Shemin HaMishha? They used it for two events. They used it to inaugurate Kohen. When a Kohen would become a Kohen, number one, he has to put on the clothes. If he's a Kohen Gadol, he wears 8 clothes. If he's a regular Kohen, he wears 4 clothes, 4 garments, and then they take this special oil and they make a certain mark on his head. And they used to anoint kings with the Shemin HaMishcha. That's the rule. Now, Mordechai, with all the respect, was not a Kohen, and he was not a king. What was Mordechai's, he was a career rabbi. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. Now, we know him from all the miracles he did on Purim, but what he did before Purim, before he became famous on Purim, his day job was sitting on the high court, and he was one of the greatest rabbis of the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin was a group of 70 rabbis that were the creme de la creme of the rabbis of Purim. And Mordechai's ranking was like number 3 or 4 on the Sanhedrin. He was right up there. They say that he was so brilliant, he spoke 70 languages. 70 languages. That's, you know, somebody could speak 5, 6 languages. We call them today a genius. And he spoke 70 and he spoke them fluently. And he did it because the halakha says that a judge has to speak all languages because you have to hear the testimony from the witness, not from a translator. So if a witness would come from, Russia and say, oh, I have to talk to the rabbi. So yeah, speak Russian, I speak it. So he can sit on the case. Anyway, Mordechai, we would call Tamid Hakam. No question, Mordechai wore Keter Torah. But he didn't have the oil on him. Right? He was never anointed. He wasn't a Kohen. He wasn't a king. Where did they find Mordechai's name? So if you look at one of the spices in that oil. Oh, Hazakah Barucha. You got it. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
From your tapes.
From the tapes. You heard it from me. Right? You're so nice. So it says in the Torah, when they're making these oil, Morderor, that's one of the spices. Now, wait, Morderor is not Mordechai, but if you look at the Unkelus, the way he translates Morderor, he explains it, Maredache. Maredache is the Aramaic term. Oh, they say, we found him. We found Mordechai in the Torah. He's hiding in the Shemen HaMishcha. So I asked, what is he doing in the Shemen HaMishcha? He's not a Kohen, and he's not a king. That's the Torah's way of saying Mordechai is bigger than them. He doesn't need Shemen HaMishcha because he had Keter Torah. So that's why specifically his name is mentioned to show they needed Shemen HaMishcha to make them what they are. Mordechai without it became great. So therefore all three are hinted in the Shemen HaMishcha, Mordechai Min HaTorah Minayin. That's how we know Mordechai's standing is higher than the others. No. Ketoret is a separate item. This is for the shemen, for the oil, that special oil that they used to anoint the Kohanim and the Melachim, called Shemen HaMishcha. We talk about it also in Parashat Ki Tisa. That's the parasha you'll find it. Now, so I continue reading the Mishnah. The Mishnah then says, and here's where it gets a little complicated. V'cheter Shem Tov ole al gabehen. The Mishnah now mentions a fourth keter, and it's called Keter Shem Tov, which seems to mean the keter of a good reputation or of a good name. And the Gemara Mishnah is saying here, Rabbi Shimon, that that is the keter that rises above all keterim. Keter Shem Tov ole al gabehem. My question when I read this Mishnah, now, of course, we know that reputation, a good name, very important. We work our whole lives to create a good name, and then we struggle not to lose it, or not to break it. Hakamim tell us, making a good reputation for oneself is like crafting a lali glass. It takes a long time to make the glass perfect, but it takes very easy to break it. So to break a reputation, you have to make a few mistakes, not even a few, even one, and that's it. Your reputation is stained. So therefore, Keter Shem Tov Ole Al Gabehem. So my question is, wait, so there's 4 crowns. I don't know, I'm confused. You started the Mishnah and you told me to be Shimon, Shelosha Ketarim Hem. And then you list to me 4. You told me Keter Torah, Keter Kehuna, Keter Malchut. So Mishnah should end. Then you say, Barabotai, the most important keter, Keter Shem Tov. Why are we Keter Shem Tov? That's the 4th keter. So why did Rabbi Shimon should have said, Arba'a Ketarim? I don't know. That is the question I had. What I said in previous years, just if you want to hear it, what I said in previous years, I would answer it. I think it didn't want to put Keter Shem Tov with the 3 because the 3 that are mentioned are exclusively only to Jewish people. Torah, you got to be Jewish. Kohen, clearly you have to be Jewish. And the king, you have to be Jewish. Whereas a good reputation and name could apply even to the Gentiles. As a matter of fact, Maimonides writes that there are Gentiles that are called Hasidei Umot HaOlam, the righteous Gentiles of the world, and they are so good that they have Olam Haba, they have eternity. So therefore, Keter Shem Tov, you can't log it on with the other three. The three are Jewish. Keter Shem Tov, that's for everybody. That's the way I understood it simply in previous. It's a simple answer. But after thinking about it a little deeper, I'd like to say the following. If you ever see a crown, I know you say, where am I going to see a crown? If you ever went to London, they have the museum over there where you can see the crown, the crown jewels. There's a museum. You see all the ketarim of the King George, King James, so on and so forth. So I went there once. I saw it. Very nice. Ketarim. Now, the keter, silver, let's say, and in the keter, what makes it beautiful is the ornaments that they have in it. They have different very precious stones that will make it ornate. Now, of course, the queen or the king, if it's missing one of those stones, the keter is flawed, and you don't wear it. They have to make sure that all the settings are filled. If it's this, one of the settings fell out, one of the stones fell out, the keter is—it's not wearable, it's not usable. It's a blemished keter. My opinion is, yes, there's keter Torah, but the most important stone on keter Torah is Shem Tov. If the scholar does not have a good reputation, he could know the whole Torah, he could know all the Torah backwards and forwards, but if he doesn't have the proper name, the proper, we'll call it Derech Eretz, the proper etiquette or the proper manner, he has the crown. But the most important ingredient of these crowns is Keter Shem Tov. It's the Shem Tov that makes the crown wearable, that makes the crown viable. So it's an integral ingredient to the other crowns that without it, you don't have Keter Torah. Keter Torah is only a Keter because it has Shem Tov. It's the Shem Tov. I'll give you an example. There were very great scholars in the times, let's say, of the prophets. One of them, his name was Gehazi. Gehazi was the top student of Elisha. Elisha was a prophet. Elisha was the top student of Eliyahu HaNavi. So you're talking about over here, the highest level. And Elisha himself, the Navi tells us, did no less than 10 stunning supernatural miracles. And Gehazi's a student. As a matter of fact, he served him. He was with him, his right-hand man. We would say to his Shamosh, he's his apprentice, Gehazi. And Gehazi was a scholar. There's some very famous laws in Torah that we learn from Gehazi. You believe it? We learn laws from this rabbi. He was a rabbi. However, Keter Torah he had. But he was he had a bad reputation. He was... Trouble's a nice way of saying it. He did certain things that were not becoming of somebody that has a lot of Torah, things with women, things with his own honor. So in the street, everybody would know, Gehazi, great scholar, but, you know, should you marry his daughter? Keep away from the guy. The guy's, well, get the Torah. No, not get the Torah. He didn't have Shem Tov. Worse than Shem Tov. The Gemara says, Saneshum Ane. Saneshum Ane means bad reputation. People, the rumors about the guy. And the rumors were correct. To the extent, according to one opinion in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Gehazi en lo helik leolam haba. You hear what I'm telling you? The top student of Elisha, you know how much Torah this guy had in his brain? But he was missing the centerpiece on the crown. He was missing Shem Tov. And then, let me explain to you why it's so critical. Because when a scholar doesn't have the proper midot, it has an adverse effect. The scholar is supposed to be a role model. Everybody's, I want my son to be a Tamid Hakam, like that one. And then when you see a Tamid Hakam who has Torah, and you see the guy's crooked or not polite or not respectful or doesn't talk to people, whatever it might be. So what do people say? That's what Torah is? I don't want my son to study Torah. Look at these scholars. So it has a negative effect. So Keter Shem Tov makes Keter Torah precious, makes it special. That's the story of Keter Torah. Chaim Baruch Alav Shalom, my rabbi, would always say to us, there were certain, I'll call them rabbis, okay, there's no other word, rabbis we'll call them, but they were unscrupulous, they were not from our cut. I don't know how to say it otherwise. Chaim Baruch was not, was not fans of them, for sure not. He probably was their adversary. And a lot of the claims that they would tell Chaim Baruch was, but Rabbi, he's a genius. That's always the claim. Whenever you have these, smart, but he's a genius. So Chaim Baruch says, where does it say that the qualification of a Talmid Chacham is to be a genius? The qualification is to have Shem Tov, he would say. What's genius? We don't measure scholarship necessarily by IQ. Now, if you have a great IQ, like Chaim Avadya, alav shalom, or my Rabbi Chaim Baruch, plus Shem Tov, plus a good reputation, Matova Manaim, then that's it. It's a win-win. But just to say he's a genius, but he's doing all sorts of funny things, so the rabbi would say, Hamon nose sefarim. Take the whole library, put it on the back of a donkey, so that it makes a donkey a Talmid Chacham. Yeah, he has the whole Torah on his back. But Hamor no zezavarim. He's still a Hamor. The Torah has to change a person into... Fine. Exactly, fine, dignified. There was a rabbi called Rav Schwab, Rav Shimon Schwab. His big pet peeve was that, all these guys are learning, but the learning is supposed to change you. The learning is supposed to make you more, like you said, refined character. Torah is a metamorphosis. Torah is not science, you just study it. Torah has to go into your bones and change you. So one of his students came to him and said, after he finished the Talmud, 2,800 pages, he said, Rabbi, you should be very proud of me. I did Shas. And the rabbi said, but what did Shas do to you? You're still the same, the same guy that you were 7 years ago. You learned it. So you read 2,800, but you did it. But it didn't do anything to you. So therefore, it's not enough. And that's why it irks us so much when we see people that are scholarly with Torah, but they don't live the part. They don't live the behavior of it. The worst thing we could hear is somebody that studies Torah and cheated. What happened to this? It doesn't go together. Shatnez. So I think Rabbi Shimon is saying, yes, Keter Torah, but don't forget, without Keter Shem Tov that's attached to Keter Torah, so Keter Shem Tov, I don't believe, is a separate Keter. It's a qualifying agent to the other three Ketarim. So it's three plus Shem Tov. Three plus, take Kehuna, for example. Kohen Gadol. I don't know if you know our history, but during the second Beit HaMikdash, lasted for 420 years. That's a long time. Even this country, it's not 400, it's 200 and something years. Close to 300 years. 420 years, long time. And it says in those 420 years, there was over 365 Kohanim Gedolim. Which means, basically every year, Shimon HaTzadik was during the Second Temple. He was a Kohen for 40 years. So 40 years he had one Kohen, he was a Tzadik. In the Second Temple there was another Kohen called Yohanan. He was actually a Kohen for 80 years. So in the 420 years, 120 of those years were occupied by two Tzadikim. Well, Yohanan went off, but in the beginning was a Tzadik. Yohanan and Shimon. So that means in 300 years, you had 365 Kohanim. That means you were losing more than one a year. How were you losing them? When they would go into the Holy of Holies on Kippur, they would get zapped. They would die. Hatzalah, no. Every Hatzalah got a call, come to the Beit HaMikdash. Why? We lost another guy. Come in with a stretcher to bring him out. What happened? They were unscrupulous. The Kohanim Gedolim, if you could imagine, it became a political position. So it became, you know, who do you know? Oh, I know the government. Okay, I'll get you in. You'll be the Kohen Gadol next year. And they paid off the position. So just because you see a Kohen Gadol doesn't mean he's necessarily worthy of it. It was a board off position. And that's what, now don't ask me, didn't they see that 200 Kohanim before them died in the Kodesh Kodashim? I don't know how the Yetzer Hara works. I guess the Yetzer Hara tells you, those guys were not me, I'm better. And the Kavod, whatever it was. So if you don't have Shem Tov, what kind of Kohen Keter Kehuna? They didn't have, those Kohanim, they were called Kohanim Gedolim, but they did not have Keter Kehuna. Because their reputation was worthless. They were crooked, they were corrupt. Everybody's over 18. The Gemara says that there was two Kohanim, the children of Eli. Eli was the high priest. His two Kohanim were, his sons were Hophni and Pinhas. The Gemara doesn't have such favorable things to say about Hophni and Pinhas. They were Kohanim Gedolim. But they had a desire for money. And they would go and grab more meat than they were supposed to from the Korban. They would eat it before God got his portion on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara refers to them as little gluttonous. The Gemara says when ladies came to bring sacrifices, they were a little inappropriate. I'm being nice. So the Gemara says, Hophni and Pinhas, Keter Kehuna, that bad name. So they're going down. It's a classic example of you could be a Kohen, but if you don't behave properly, the street ends up saying, oh, those guys, I don't want to say anything. So it's not enough just to say, I'm a Kohen Gadol. Oh, not okay. What's your name? What's your derech eretz? What's your behavior? What's your reputation? And thirdly is Keter Malchut, which is the same thing. I'll give you one example of Keter Malchut. A little history for a second. So the first king ever that was chosen was Shaul. Now Shaul wasn't from the Davidic dynasty. Shaul's from Binyamin, not from Yehuda. But God had a plan. He wanted Shaul to start off the kingdom. He was the great. Shaul is Sadiq Yisod. After a certain amount of time, God said, now we're going to start the real kingdom of David. David, of course, is the first king. However, at a certain point, a fight broke out and the kingdom was divided. So you would have Malchut David on one side and then Malchei Yisrael. So David, let's say, was the king over two tribes, and you had another king that was the king over, there was a split in the kingdom. It was not a good thing. It was not a good thing. And then when we read Nevi'im, we're always reading about the two kings, the rival kings, the king of Yehuda and the king of Israel, the Jewish. So what happened? So the first king of Malchei Yisrael, Yerovam ben Nevat. Now, I want to just tell you how he was appointed. He wasn't appointed because his father was the king. He doesn't come from royalty. He was chosen by God. So that means he's must be an important man. If God, out of all the people, chose him to be the first king for Israel after Shaul. Yerovam was a great scholar as well. So I think he wore two crowns. He had a big head. He had Keter Torah and he had Keter Malchut. The Gemara says that there's room on the head for two tefillin. There's room to wear two crowns. The Kohen had seats and he had his tefillin on, so he could have two crowns. But what should I tell you? His well, more jealousy got to him. That was his Achilles heel, jealousy. What was he jealous of? Every 7 years, the custom was all the Jewish people would come to Jerusalem and they would come to the Temple Mount. And the king of Yehuda would give a derasha to the people. And they would put a chair in the courtyard. One chair. Because you're not allowed to sit in the courtyard of God, except if you're from the kings of Yehuda. So Yerovam's thinking to himself, I'm going to go to this event. I'm a king also. There's one chair. He's going to sit. I'm standing. What is it, the F train? I'm standing over here. So he got all my honor. They're going to think that he's bigger than me. Don't ask me how great people get caught up into this stuff. It happens. You'd be surprised. Yetzer hara is very clever. He figures out how to bring down great. You would say to yourself, what do you mean? You're the king of Israel. God loves you. Just be happy. Everybody's giving. It doesn't work that way. Once you're hungry, you get even more hungry until you want things that don't belong to you. Anyway, you know, now, I think you know the end of the story, but still hold on to your seats. So I don't want you to fall off your seats. He said, I cannot let the people go to Jerusalem, because if they go to Jerusalem, they're going to see the king of Yehuda sitting in that chair, and that will ruin my reputation. So he rerouted the people. He put roadblocks, like on the streets over here. You can get down this block. There's a guy standing there, slow down, make a U-turn. He blocked the streets. And it says detour. So when you follow a detour, you think you're going to get to the place. It's going to take you 15 minutes longer. He rerouted them to two different locations, and in those locations, he built two golden calves. You remember the Egel? He did two times two. It's Egel 2.0. And now, you know, it led him to become a sinner and cause others to sin. All because why? He was seeing stars of jealousy. So yeah, he's a king, Keter Malchut. But Yerovam ben Nevat, his reputation is Chote u'mahati et ha'am ve'en lo chalek le'olam haba. He lost his chalek le'olam haba. So you could be Malchut, but without Keter Shem Tov, you don't have it. So he lost it. So therefore, I think the Mishnah is saying the three primary Ketarim are Torah, Kehunan, Malchut, but Keter Shem Tov ole al gabehen. That's what the Mishnah says. It rises above them, above those crowns. Which means on each one of these crowns, reputation is vital to maintain for these crowns to have any important value. Good. Now I said to myself, when I read this Mishnah, I said, wait. I found the three crowns in the Mishkan. I found Torah in the Aron, as is it. I found Kehuna in the Mizbeach. That's Keter Kehuna. It has a Zer. It has a crown. I found Malchut by the golden table. It has a Zer. But where is Shem Tov? Again, I'm sorry to tell you that there's no other furnishing that has a crown. So I'm a little stuck because the Mishnah says Keter Shem Tov. Unless you say, like I just said, it's an add-on to the other crowns. But the Mishnah does call it Keter Shem Tov. It calls it Keter. So the theory that I came up with the permission of our members, if you accept it, then we'll sign a paper and that's it. We'll put it in the books. The theory that I want to say is there was another furnishing that was also very significant. And I believe it had a crown, but a different type of crown. A crown that clearly was higher than all the other crowns as well. And that's the menorah. The menorah, although it did not have a physical gold crown, but when the Kohen lit the menorah, what does it say? Leha'alot ner tamid. The Nerot would rise up. My opinion is that why is Shem Tov so important? Because when a person has a reputation, that reputation shines forth and you're able to have now a proper influence. The Torah scholar only is able to influence his Torah on people if he has the proper reputation, that people want to hear what he has to say. But if a person, they tell him, listen, he's got great Torah, but a little shady. I'm not going to the class. Leave me alone. I'm going to get involved with it. So to have influence, Shem Tov is what gives you the influence. Shem Tov is what gives the Kohen Gadol influence, what gives the king influence. But if the Shem Tov is not there, you don't have it. So therefore, in America, they say he's a shining example. That's the word that they use. It's like the menorah. The menorah, its crown is different than the other crowns. The other crowns in the three vessels are inanimate. They don't have any influence outwardly. Whereas the light of the menorah shines. V'keter Shem Tov Oleh like it says by the menorah, leha'alot ner tamid oleh agam, which means if you have Torah and your Torah shines forth because you have Shem Tov, then already it's a value. So therefore, the menorah, I believe, is the example in the Mishkan of the Keter Shem Tov. Now, based on this, my question then is, I love it that Rabbi Shimon said this, because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we can't do anything better, ladies. The day before Lag BaOmer, to talk about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and what he said, we brought Meron to Brooklyn. But my question is, we have to connect this Mishnah to the rabbi. You know, these rabbis, when they said their statements, they were connected to their statements. They didn't just say random statements. They didn't have a certain bond to the statement. Their statements were linked to their personality, who they were. There's a song that was written in honor of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It was written by a great tzaddik called Rabbi Shimon Levi. We have it in our Pizmon book. The song is called Bar Yochai. Some people even sing it every Friday night. It's an old tradition that on the Friday night table, after Kiddush or before Kiddush, they sing the whole Bar Yochai. And what does it say? Bar Yochai. Nimshachta. You were anointed. Ashrecha. You were fortunate. Shemen sason. With the oil of joy. Shemen sason. Mehaberecha. You were anointed over your friends. Bar Yochai nimshachta. Now, we all know that Bar Yochai was not nimshachta. He wasn't a king. And he wasn't a kohen. He was a scholar. So what do you mean? Bar Yochai nimshachta. Bar Yochai was not nimshachta. But it's using that word because what did King Solomon say about reputation? Very good. He said, Tov Shem, Meshem and Tov. A good name is greater than a reputation. Than good oil. I take that back. Tov Shem, a good name, Meshem and Tov is greater or more significant than good oil. Now, the reason why he chose Shem, Shem, because they sound the same, so it's poetic a little. Tov Shem, Meshem and Tov. He could have said, Tov Shem, Mehalatova. Well, it doesn't sound like a rhyme. So they were Tov Shem, Shem, Shem. It has a nice sound to it. That's a simple explanation. Based on what I just told you, where do we learn Shem Tov from? The menorah. So he might be saying, Tov Shem, where do we learn Tov Shem from? Meshem and Tov, from the good oil. What's the good oil of the menorah? You understand how I'm learning it? Tov Shem, from where do we learn it from? Meshem and Tov, we learn it from Shem and Tov of the menorah, la'alot ner tamid, that shined. That's a new explanation. One time I explained it a little differently. What does it mean, Tov Shem, Meshem and Tov? A good name is better than good oil. I once said like this. And then Rabbi Shwaki from Dio Korba, we said, this is a beautiful explanation. I accept it. After Rabbi accepts it, finished, that's it. You made my day. The great rabbis accepted the Vrei Torah. That means it's emet. What I said was like this. If you ever saw an oil slick, you have an oil truck coming down the block, and it's a bump, and all the oil spills in the street. So there's only one way to clean up the spill. They have to take dirt and they have to just cover the oil so the dirt absorbs. And then you put enough dirt, it gets rid of the oil. So I said, when somebody leaves this world with a good name, all the 6 feet of dirt that they put on them cannot cover up the good name. The good name penetrates and pierces through. So Tov Shem, while dirt is able to maybe cover up oil, but it's not able to cover up a good name. When a person leaves this world with a good name, even though he's 6 feet underground, everybody still talks about his name. Tov Shem, Meshem and Tov. Shem and Tov, you cover up with dirt. But Shem Tov, all the dirt in the world, cannot bury it. That's another explanation. But we said now something more. Tov Shem Hashem and Tov, which means, you're right, Bar Yochai did not have the anointment of Kehuna or Malchut, but he had a good name, as I'll explain to you now. He had Shem Tov. And therefore, Shem Tov is better than that. So then we say, Bar Yochai Nimshachta. Where were you anointed? Shem Tov, that's the biggest anointment. Tov Shem and Shem and Tov. It's better than the anointment. Now, let me explain to you in a deep way. What does it mean? Bar Yochai Shem Tov. I hope I can explain this to you correctly. It's based on a very, very deep principle that was set forth from a great rabbi called Maharal from Prague, who was one of the greatest Jewish philosophers and ideologues. He has tremendous sefarim, and they're deep. They're filled with Kabbalah and Hashkafa. It's a hard book to learn, Maharal, but nonetheless, there's a lot of wisdom and gems. Maharal. So he's Rabbi Lowy. That's the red, Maharal. Lowy. Who's Levi? Lowy. He's buried in the old cemetery in Prague. If anybody ever went to Prague, right outside this synagogue, the Alta Noy synagogue, the old new synagogue, in the cemetery over there, there's a big tzaddikim. The Kli Yakar is buried over there. And yeah, the Maharal. And they claim that upstairs in the shul, that's where he built the golem. That's where he had the creature that he created from using holy names of Hashem to protect the community from anti-Semitism. So he would activate this bully, and the guy would come out and, you know, scare all the goyim away, and then put him back to sleep up in the attic. And there's a story. There's a book on the Maharal in Prague with the golem. They called the golem. Anyway, there's a pasuk in the Torah when God created Adam, he said, Na'ase Adam, let us make man. And all the rabbis jumped. Let us? There's no committee. There's only God. There was no a partner. There was no corporation here. Na'ase Adam, let us make man. Who's the us? So the Gemara has an opinion on this. Gemara says that God went to the angels and he asked the angels, you know, in humility, not that God has to ask the angels, but he was teaching us to be humble, that when you're doing something, you know, it's derech eretz to take counsel, even though you don't need to take the counsel. So God went to the angels, Na'aseh Adam, you know, let's make man. And actually the angels told him, don't do it. And God said, you know, I didn't come to you for advice, I've come to you for derech eretz. From there we learn, one time many years ago, this is 1984, I was in Sharia Torah. It was a small boys' school, maybe you heard of it, there was maybe 15 boys that time. So my rabbi Hillel Haber, he's a great tzaddik, and I'll never forget, he called me at his office. He said, Eliyahu, I want to bounce something off for you. It's over me. I'm a kid. What do I know? That I'm in high school. What's he going to bounce off of me? Something about the basketball team? What's he going to talk to me about? So he said, we're thinking to open up Sharia Torah girls' school. Listen, you boys are learning. You're on a different level. You're going to need girls that are compatible with you. He's trying to sell it to me. You know? So he says, what do you think we open up a... Now, I'm immature, obviously. I'm in the 11th grade. What do I know? He's asking me. Now, now that I'm older, I know he was being humble. He didn't have to ask me. What do I know? I'm a kid. Of course, I told him, don't do it. I told him, don't do it, because I didn't want to share the rabbi. Because I knew if we have to open up a girls' school, that means he's going to have to spend some of his time. And we were very overprotective of the rabbi. So my opinion was, you know, it's a terrible idea. That means you're going to be there for a day. No, Now, he wasn't asking me for my worthless opinion. That was the rabbi teaching us humility, that, you know, you have an idea, you bounce it off somebody that's, you know, somebody that's... And I learned a lesson. And where did he learn it from? The rabbi? From God. When God's creating Adam, he tells the angels. What are the angels compared to God? But God comes to him and says, Na'aseh Adam. They say, well, they answered like me, by the way. Don't do it. So at least I followed the script. The angels also said, don't do it. And they were wrong, like I was. Anyway, but there's a deeper explanation that the Baal Shem Tov says. And then I'll tell you the Mahalal. Oh, the Baal Shem Tov says something. Oh. He says, the creation of man is different than all other creatures. All other creatures are created complete, and their development is already built in code, in their DNA. A little bear will become a big bear. A caterpillar will become a butterfly. These are natural, automatic. The animal does not have to think, does not have to do anything. It's intuitive, or it's instinctive, I should say. It just happens by itself. It's out of their control, as a matter of fact. Even angels do not participate in their development. They're created, whatever the angel they are, and they don't become a better angel or a worse angel. They're created as they are. The only creature that actually is a work in progress is the human. The human is created with certain kohot, with certain, we'll call it potential. Now we get to the Maharal. Maharal says, listen, you have to have certain tools. Now, of course, it'll depend on what you do with those tools, but God gives everybody the same tools. Amazingly enough, he calls the tools Keter Torah, Keter Kehuna, Keter Malchut. Maharal is so deep. He saw this Mishnah. He didn't see it like we did. Oh, three different people. No, there's no matter us. All of us possess these three crowns, every human being. And he would say, Keter Torah, God endows humans with intellect. Now, our intellect is not like the intellect of all the other creatures. Animals have intellect, but it's very, very limited just for them to survive, just so they can exist. It's not a, you know, you never read a book written by a, you know, a monkey, or a, you ever go to a college, and into maybe college you see some animals, but that, in outside of that. The point is, the intellect is a human, the human brain. That's the intellect. Hashem has to give us that because that's the way we can see things and learn Torah. Keter Torah is the intellect. Keter Kehuna, he says, listen to how sharp he is. You become a Kohen because you were born to parents that were Kohanim, or father was a Kohen. It's paternal. Just like our bodies, the body is paternal. It's something that we got from our parents. The parents give us the body. We were born. So like a Kohen is born, he becomes a Kohen. So Keter Kehuna, he says, refers to the body. That's related to paternal. Keter Malchut is the soul. We'll have a soul. That should be, and it is, the supreme part of the human being, which is the Melech. By the way, it's not even a stretch of the imagination. Because the neshama is a piece of God. And God is Melech. God is the Melech. Melech, Malkei Melechim. So we have a piece of God in us. So Maharal says, you have all three. You have Keter Torah, that's your intellect, to understand things. You have the body, that's Keter Kehuna. And then you have the soul. Well, then he writes, and the Baal Shem Tov, I'm going back and forth, Baal Shem Tov says, humans, however, they get potential. But it's not necessarily automatic that they're going to develop that potential. It is automatic that a caterpillar will turn into a butterfly. That automatic. You never saw one that didn't. But human beings, their development is dependent on their free will and choices. Either they could choose to let the neshama guide them, or to let their body guide them. If they follow the guidance, and again, this is the intellect. The intellect makes that decision. To either follow the melech, or to follow the goof. Which And that's what we do all day. We struggle with this. That's free will. And the more we choose right, the more we develop ourselves. So when God created the animals, he said, I shall create them. Once God created the animals, they're done. But when God created Adam, says the Baal Shem, he said to us, Na'aseh Adam, you are my partner in your creation. I need you to finish what I started. So therefore it's Na'aseh Adam, let us, he's talking to man. I gave you the potential. But now it's up to you to realize it. Now it's up to you to do something positive. I cannot choose for you. So therefore, we are the partners of God. And that's why many times in the Talmud it says, if a person does a certain mitzvah, Na'asa shutaf im HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you become God's partner. What does it mean you become God's partner? It means, because God said that's exactly what I created you for. When I said Na'asa Adam, I meant to say, it's up to you. And what does God call the first man, which is the prototype of all man? Adam. There's two views on why he was called Adam. I know the view that you heard, and of course, it's the one that's obvious in the Torah. Adam comes from the word Adama. There's an etymology. Adam is created from the dirt. So therefore, he's called Adama. Now, that's a very non-flattering name. And we will call him dirt. Whoa, it's the handiwork of God. We know that he's created from dirt, but you can call him all nice. Call him Abraham, call him Isaiah, Adam. I mean, it's not like there weren't names available. Every name is available. He's the first one. Any name you call him is better than Adam. And then God says, you know why I'm calling you Adam? Because you come from the Adama. But that name is the most suitable because what is Adama? No, Adama is potential. Earth is potential. Now, depending on the way you work the ground, it could produce endless amount, but it needs intervention. The ground on its own is dormant. It doesn't produce anything. But if you go and put seeds and plow and fertilize and work, you could produce the most aromatic flowers and spices. You could produce the most delicious fruits. You could produce the most magnificent trees. Is the ground limited in what it can produce? It's unlimited. The ground can, and look at the world. Look at what goes on. The earth shows you that from raw potential, if it is developed, and that's what God is telling Adam. Your name is actually your essence. You are Adam. Because you are like, that's why I created you from Adama, to show you that the sky's the limits. But Adama will only produce if somebody works it. Adam, you have to work. The zebra doesn't have to work. He just has to grow and eat and he'll just become like everybody else in that kingdom, in that genre. But humans, you have many different people. Why don't they all end up the same way? Because they chose. He chose to be delinquent and he chose or she chose to be. So the Zohar HaKadosh says there's another reason why Adam is called Adam because it's a pasuk in the Nevi'im. The pasuk says, Edme la'alyon. Edme means I will imitate and model God. So the way the Kabbalah learns Adam's name is, Adam is up to you. Either you could be Adama, like dirt, which is nothing, or Edme, you could be like God. The choice is yours. It's all in your name. Now if he chooses Edmeh, that means he works on himself. So that's why Rabbi Shimon is saying such a deep concept here. There's three items that God gave you. You had nothing to do with them. He gave you Keter Torah, your intellect. He gave you Keter Keuna, your body, your physical drives and inclinations. And he gave you Keter Malchut, gave you your soul. But Keter Shem Tov, what's the Shem of humans? Adam. That's the most important because that's where you come into the picture. The Shem of Adam, which we all have, we're B'nai Adam. We have the Shem. What you do with that Shem, either you become Adama or you become Edmeh. Making the decisions through free will, which is we control our destiny. No other being controls their destiny except humans. That's called Keter Shem. That's what's Oleh Al Gabbehem because that's your God's partner. God says, I can't do anymore. I gave you everything. Na'aseh Adam. It's up to you. And that's why if you go to that song that they write about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, somewhere in that song it says, Rabbi Shimon Lavi, the author of the song, says, Na'aseh Adam ne'emar ba'avurecha. Rabbi Shimon, when God said, let there be man, let us make man, he was talking about you. Na'aseh Adam ne'emar ba'avurecha. Because he's the prototype of that. He's a man who showed us how high you can raise yourself. He left this world practically from all the physical pleasures. He went into a cave and just ate, caribs and Shabbat. It says he ate dates and water. He lived in the sand, had no physical pleasures. And look what this human, he was able to become so godly, like Moshe Rabbeinu. He brought the Zohar Kadosh down. The Zohar writes that only through the study of Zohar will Mashiach come at the end of days. And therefore we say, what a partner, God says. You're the best partner I've had. I gave you some potential, and look what you made from yourself. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon, he can talk. He can say, take it from me. Keter Shem Tov. I was born with potential like everybody else. But I worked. And the proof is in the pudding. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shelosha Ketarim Hem. Keter Torah. Keter Kehuna. Keter Malchut. Keter Shem Tov. What you're going to do with that potential? The keter of a good name of Adam, either Adama or Edme, or Le'al Gaben. That rises about all of them. And we end, we say about Bar Yochai, about a great rabbi, Torato Magen Lanu. The Torah of Rabbi Shimon, Magen Lanu, protects us. He Mi'irat Enenu. It is the light of our eyes. Zichuto Yagen Ba'adenu. His Zichut should stand for us, Adonenu Bar Yochai.